The David that I'm taunting this morning is my friend David Yepsen. David, how are you, pal? You're well?
I am well. It's good to be with you, Tom.
It's a little depressing now. I don't even have the prospect of seeing you when I go to the bookstore now.
I'll get down there one of these days.
All right. Well, we'll have to plan up to be able to meet at the bookstore then and have some coffee.
Okay.
You know, you've been a busy guy for the last, what, 8 days, 8 days plus, really, when you think about it, with all the pressure that comes on new Iowa with the caucuses. If you don't know, David is basically the Gandhi, all right, the oracle of the Iowan caucuses. Anybody in media who wants to know about the Iowa caucuses for years has gone to David Yepsen to be able to get the answers. So we're glad he was able to join us this morning. So in that respect, David, how do you define what happened in Iowa and the caucuses on the Democratic side of the aisle?
Yeah, it was a mess. A lot of mathematical problems, tabulation errors. It was really a political disaster, and I think it probably will diminish, if not end, the Iowa Democratic caucuses as an early indicator of presidential strength. You just can't have candidates spending days here in Iowa and millions of dollars and then have the tabulation system just collapse on caucus night. So I think it'll be diminished, if not eliminated, in future campaigns. On the Republican side, I think there will continue to be Republican caucuses in Iowa. They have a much simpler process than Democrats do for tabulating votes. They have a straw vote, drop a slip of paper in the box and count it up. That's pretty straightforward. And I would imagine that in 2024 there'll be a pretty good caucus campaign in this state. It leans Republican, and there's certainly the Republican Party, and come 2024, one way or another, is going to be looking for what it wants to do and become in the post-Donald Trump era.
How much of the responsibility on the miscalculations falls on the creator of the app?
Oh, a lot. What the Democratic Party did was rely on an app to count and tabulate these votes, was to rely on a new app. And it wasn't stress tested. There were bugs in it. That's why you update your apps every day a couple of times. And it just wasn't done. To do that on such short notice was a recipe for error. The party rejected help from the Department of Homeland Security that was interested in this. You know, Tom, if there's one piece of good news that comes out of this for the whole country, is that our elections are fragile and we have to be careful and vigilant and check and double check. Americans are very much aware of other countries intervening in our election, of hackers who mess around with our processes. I mean, the Democrats here in Iowa had a phone bank for to receive information from their local county party leaders and results. And those lines were jammed by fringe groups who were just calling in trying to flood the phone bank. Well, there's that sort of nefarious pranksterism, if you will, going on. So it's a good thing that the country got a taste of what lies ahead in all these other contests. Nevada is looking at what it's doing in their caucuses that are coming up. So every election official, I think, in the country got a little wake-up call that it's a big election, lots at stake, it's complicated, better check and recheck all the processes that you're using.
And there's another issue here. There was a recent published article. It talked about how 1988, and here the irony of this is incredible, the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, right, David Yepsen,
right,
that in 1988, Paul Simon had his struggles in Iowa as well, and many say because of how the Iowa caucuses were handled, that it put an early end to his presidential run.
That's right. Paul felt that he did better than the tabulations show. You see, what's difficult is they don't count heads in the Iowa Democratic Caucus. They count up the bodies and that are in the room for a candidate, and then they allocate delegates. So you first of all have to get your head count right in the room, and then as people move around to join campaigns that aren't, to leave campaigns that are not viable, to join campaigns that are. There's another count, and then you have to allocate delegates. And, you know, back then it was much different. It was all done by hand. And back in 1988, there was a lot of leeway for error. We just weren't as vigilant in this country as we are about elections and their precision today. That country's attitudes towards accuracy in elections changed after the 2000 election. So back in 1988, you know, well, it's margin of error. It was a little bit of calling of the race before the tabulations were done. So, yeah, I know Paul felt like he got a little bit of a short whistle from Dick Gephardt.
You know, and it's interesting because you talk about the accuracy. Well, yeah, I think people yearn for accuracy, and here's one of the reasons why. You look at the numbers out of New Hampshire this morning. Bernie Sanders at 25.9% and Pete Buttigieg at 24.4%. We're talking about very small areas of separation. And so when they're that close, accuracy does, in fact, really count. With that in mind, David, did the outcome from the New Hampshire primary election give in some form legitimacy to the outcomes in Iowa's because there were such strong parallels?
Yes, there was still an effect on Iowa on New Hampshire. Pete Buttigieg did well here. That perked up his numbers in New Hampshire. Amy Klobuchar in Iowa finished back in the pack, but she was starting to move up and being noticed, and people were paying attention to her. So despite all the flaws, there was still time for the count in this state to be tabulated, and it did have some effect in New Hampshire.
Did the impeachment hearings cause Joe Biden to be back of the pack?
I think so. This Democrats are very much looking for someone who's electable. Lots been said about that. And with all this stirring around about Joe Biden's son and what he was, his business interests in Ukraine, I think it left a bad taste in the mouths of a lot of Democrats who said, ooh, what's this all about? We like old Joe. But I think the other thing that hurt Biden was he had some stammering and stuttering problems in debates, and it just wasn't the same young, vigorous Joe Biden that people had remembered. And if you turn in a performance like that in a debate, it's awful. And Amy Klobuchar had good performance in that last debate. The exit polls today that people are going through showing that many of her supporters decided to vote for her solely on the basis of that excellent performance in her debate. So I think that's sort of the story emerging out of Iowa and New Hampshire. One of the stories is that Amy Klobuchar is carving out a real niche for herself in this campaign.
But, you know, David, in that debate, Yang had a great performance by many people's standards as well. And look at him. He hung it up this morning.
Yeah, but Andrew Yang was sort of seen as an interesting, articulate guy who had things to say, but was never treated as someone who was thought as someone who could go the distance. These are interesting candidates. They're vanity candidates, if you will. Tulsi Gabbard in that same, Marianne Williamson was. They're people who are running for president. They have something to say. They have a message. And in Andrew Yang's case, it really took off, had a lot of appeal to younger voters, but he was never seen as someone who had a realistic prospect of winning the Democratic nomination for president.
Yeah, I wonder how effective it is when you call your own supporters a dog-faced pony soldier.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff carries, you know, and it has effect on what, and that's what you call one of your own supporters. You know, there was a lot of that.
Well, and he joked around about he knew a lot of Asian doctors, and he took some heat for that. And you know, running for president, the scrutiny gets white hot, and somebody like Klobuchar has endured some of that scrutiny as a U.S. senator. But she is starting to hit that sweet spot that Democrats are looking for: someone who is progressive without being a socialist,
right?
Who gets things done, who has won elections. And she's a woman. I mean, Democrats, that's an important constituency in the Democratic Party, so she's a little bit different in that regard, represents change. And that's why I think she did okay here in Iowa, and she did well in New Hampshire.
The thing that has been echoed time and time again in Iowa and New Hampshire in montages of potential voters and undecided voters, I don't know who I'm going to vote for, but I need to vote for the person that I know can beat Donald Trump. Issues you would think would be really important, but it's not. Who can beat Trump seems to be the mantra.
That's right. I mean, Democrats just detest Donald Trump. They hate him. They're offended by him. And so, unlike past elections that I've watched and covered when I was a reporter, beating of their opponent is the big deal here. That's usually an issue of some kind, but it's not. Regular policy issues are important. Health care is the most important policy issue. And that was why voters, caucus goers in Iowa, and we saw the same thing in New Hampshire, were taking such careful time to watch the race and make a choice. They were really struggling with finding that person they felt was can beat Trump. And I imagine going into Nevada and South Carolina, we're going to see the same thing.
And, I find this interesting. Who can beat Trump? Because when you look at the priorities in Gallup polls from 2019, what are the priorities, the top priorities of the people in this country? Number one, economy. Number two, health care costs, education, defense against terrorism, Social Security, and keeping it financially sound. And then down at 17th out of 18 is global climate change, right? Which is one of the premier topics when it comes to the Democrats, when it comes this year around. What do we consider important? And you don't see beat Trump on this because it's not one of the questions. But still, I would think that, and the reason why I think this way, David, is because of you. It's your fault. And I've told you this story about Congressman Kenny Gray, and I met him when I was like 17, 19, something in there. And we were talking about elections. It was at a political event, which at the time I was required to attend because of my employer.
Right?
Don't do that anymore, do we? And he says, people won't walk across the street to vote for you, but they will crawl across the street on broken glass, on their hands and knees to vote against you. And this I find interesting because of your comments with me about whenever races get nasty, that a certain percentage of people have become disenfranchised and don't participate. Those things existing in the same room are kind of tough to figure out.
Well, that's the way voters are. And I think Kenny had a good point there.
Yeah, that hate does drive us. I don't know who I'm voting for, but I most certainly know who I'm voting against.
That's correct. And the country's very polarized, and passions run high on both sides about this stuff. And it's a fascinating story. But the anger, you can see the anger in the numbers of people who the Trump Sanders voter. There are people who voted for Bernie Sanders in 2016 when he didn't get nominated. They switched over and voted for Trump, and there's still, and the Sanders people will argue today that that's one of the reasons for their candidacy, is that they can attract people who voted for Trump because everybody is so upset with the state of American society.
Got a weird question that came in earlier this morning, and I don't remember much of the history of this, that, they have the red and blue states, and one of our listeners said that once upon a time the Republican Party was blue, Reagan was president, and now red. Did we flip colors of how states were represented, red, blue, that patriotic color?
Yes, and it was one of the, I can't remember the whole story, Tom, but one of the networks might have been NBC, and this would have been, I'm thinking back in 1980, just started using different colors. It has no political significance at all. I mean, it's just a graphic artist who switched things, and other people picked up on it, and it stuck. So don't read too much into that. It was just something a TV graphics guy did.
Yeah, I was kind of curious because some people say, well, yeah, it's red because it's communist. I'm like, oh, wait a second here. So in any event, David Yepsen joining us, former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. Now, of course, as we said, the great oracle of the Iowa caucuses. As you look back on this and forward to at the same time, so you're really kind of a mind right now that the Iowa caucuses cause self-mutilation, self-damage here to the point where it may not have the relevancy that it has had in the past.
Right. My metaphor for this is the Iowa Democratic caucuses are like creeping Charlie in your yard. Everybody hates them. You can't figure out how to kill them, and you don't know what to replace them with. And if you think about that, you've described the dilemma Democrats have with this process. And there isn't anybody in the Democratic Party nationally that likes the Iowa caucuses. It's disproportionate influence on this small white state. But they can't figure out an alternative. You want to go to regional primaries? You want to change it to other states? Well, those states would have problems too. The country sort of agreed on having four early states to start this thing off. Maybe it makes some sense to have Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada all vote on the same day. In 2016, NPR did a study of what would be the most typical state to start a presidential campaign in, and Illinois was the one they lit upon.
J.B. Pritzker agrees. The governor's been saying the same thing the last couple of days.
Unfortunately, Illinois' history of civic corruption means that the rest of the country just wouldn't cede to Illinois that kind of influence over the presidential elections. I mean, you go back to Richard Daley finding extra votes for John Kennedy in the 60s in an election campaign. You got a governor in prison. When I saw that, people were talking about it. Can you imagine the country saying, a state with that kind of level of corruption is going to have a huge influence in selection of a president? Rod Blagojevich famously said the Senate seat was golden,
right,
or words to that effect.
Yes.
That would never fly with other states. So it's difficult. The country hates it, but they can't figure out a way to get rid of it, and they don't know what to replace it with. So stay tuned.
David Yepsen. David, as always, it's a privilege. I miss seeing you, buddy.
Well, I miss seeing you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I really do enjoy your insights, and I'm hoping as we get through, we get some more opportunities to talk and watch this, what will be an incredibly volatile election. Can you imagine Bernie Sanders, socialist Democrat, against capitalist Trump? What's interesting, and you and I have talked about this, that one of your jobs when you go out there on the race is to differentiate yourself from your opponent. Well, that's not going to be a problem.
Absolutely. No,